From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of March, 2014. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll take a look at the commodity markets and how the trade finished up for the month of February with Mike Zuzlo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, and Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises. Out of Mandeville, Louisiana, both were snowed out of our all-day ag event over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Of course, I was there throughout the day, and this program was recorded on Monday afternoon. Good news for you, Mike and Dan will be here to talk about the marketplace, look back at the month of February, and forward to the growing season on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Well, no live quotes for you today because I'm not in studio, but let's look back over the month of February. We had a high in the month for the soft red winter wheat lead option, or rather July contract, at $6.24 3/4, and below its $5.60 settlement price there. On the month of February at $6.08 1/4 was up 46 3/4 from the previous month. March corn for the month of February finished like this with a high of $4.59 and a low in the March corn of $4.33 1/4. Settlement price for the month at $4.57 1/2 was 23 1/2 cents higher than the previous month or the month of January. And December corn, your new crop contract, finished, well, I don't have the availability for the December corn at the moment, but we do have the March soybeans, and this is the way they looked for the month. And February was a large trading range from 14.52 1/4 on the top to the bottom at 12.78 1/2. A settlement price up near the top at $14.14 1/4. It finished $1.31 1/2 higher for the month of February. And in the November contract, futures finished at $11.69 1/4. They were up 64 3/4 for the month. Bean meal on the month, and this is the final trade for the month of February. When we look at that, they finished up at $467.90. That was up $41.80 for the month in the bean oil and the lead option March contract. And the bean meal for the month finished at $41.52. That was up $3.88. Well, thanks to all those folks who made it to the All-Day Ag Outlook. We do appreciate you being there for the event. We will be posting the programs to our website at willag.org, willag.org. It may take just a bit because we did videotape the programs. It takes a while to ingest those hour-long events into the digital system and get them back up so that you can watch it. But if you are signed up for our All-Day Ag Outlook, you'll be able to come in and easily review what you saw. If you didn't make it, you can always just visit our website at willag.org. Sign up for our newsletter over on the right-hand side of the page. Just hit subscribe, and you'll know exactly when we put those up on our website. Again, the All-Day Ag Outlook panel's up on our website at willag.org. That'll happen within a couple of weeks from this point.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for Tuesday afternoon. It is the fourth day of March 2014. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason out of the office this afternoon at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana for the all-day agricultural outlook. On the phone line are a couple of guys that weren't able for one reason or the other, we'll say weather, to make it into the Beef House for the event. That's the first time, I think, that Dan Zwicker and Mike Zuzulo both have missed one of these events in years. Sorry you guys couldn't make it, and hope that you're safe and traveling on this Monday afternoon as we record. I do appreciate you taking the time with us and filling in for the afternoon and making sure that your voices are heard, not only by the folks that listen to us, but the guys that came to the all day, because they should be in their trucks by now and headed back home. Thanks so much, by the way, for making your way over to the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. So let's begin our discussion, Dan Zwicker, with you. Can you take me through kind of what the monthly charts at this point are telling you about corn and soybeans? Just pick the one that is of most interest to you, and whether it's old or new crop, it doesn't matter to me.
Well, I think I'll start with the oldest uptrend. For the most part, soybeans put their season low in place in late November, I think it was, and have been basically in a sideways to higher trend until the past couple of weeks. And that sideways to higher trend on the lead futures contract was about 96 cents wide. And the last week and a half or so, soybeans were able to bust through that and basically double that channel, and that was that move up to that 14-something level. So I think that happened like on Thursday. Last Thursday we had kind of like what I would call as a technician, a spike high, went sharply higher. The expiring March futures, I think, was up like 48 cents, and then it closed down like 2 or 3 cents. The soybean market was able to regroup on Friday and close higher. I think even with Monday's disappointing action in it, I don't see that as necessarily bearish. But anytime you kind of get like a spike high that met most upside objectives that I had looking at it from a pure chartist point of view, I had an upside on November beans of like 11.82. I think we went to like 11.84 or something like that. Had that $14 short-term nearby objective, and then had an objective on, I think, May futures around 1342, and I think we went to 1345. So from my point of view, when I look at having met the objectives and then having put in those spike highs, I think beans are more in a consolidation phase here to work off an overbought technical condition. I think the bean market can regroup. There's still going to be a need fundamentally, I think, to push some of these old crop sales in the new crop marketing year. That might be the real reason we go up the next time at the moment. So I'll turn it over to Mike and let him have a chance at it.
Yeah, so Mike, why don't you take us through your version of what the soybean market looks like at this point?
It's very similar. I think the beans are waiting for more news, and I think that's what Dan said there at the end. I think you're probably going to be waiting for updated U.S. stocks info, meaning 13-14 ending stocks on the supply-demand report here in another few days, and you're probably waiting for updated, most importantly, updated South American production info by WASD, Todd. And so I doubt at this stage of the game, especially given how supportive the wheat and the corn have been here in the last several trading days, that we'll see much more of a pullback in the bean sector and especially the meal sector unless we take out last Friday's lows in the lead month meal. Then you've got the technicians and probably some of the high-frequency, low-frequency fund people that will be forced to essentially get out of their long positions because the charts tell them to. But I think, again, we're in kind of a wait-and-see mindset when it comes to the beans, especially the old crop. I do think, after talking to both producers at the Commodity Classic last week and Chicago traders at the end of last week and the beginning of this week about the new crop prospects. I do think you're starting to see a little bit of a crack in the mindset of new crop beans being bought and new crop corn being sold, because the weather maps are starting to suggest that it's going to be a long, drawn-out thaw for somewhere in the Corn Belt, and that the southern belt of the Corn Belt and Bean Belt may not get planted as fast as they normally like, especially if this southerly flow that we generated in terms of moisture this past weekend becomes a trend of the next 3 weeks. And so I think you're probably getting to the end, both technically and fundamentally, of the trade wanting to buy November beans aggressively at the expense of December corn.
Now, I want to stay with old crop for just a second with both of you. I'm surprised, I guess, a little bit of the stability of that marketplace that you are discussing at this point, given the time of year, given when the export market normally would shift to South American origination. Dan, you suggested that some of the bean sales on the books already might be shifted into the coming marketing year. That would be a bit further down the line and be good, I suppose, for the bean market. But is there not going to be pressure to come to bear out of South America fairly shortly?
Well, one of three things has to happen. Either outright sales cancellations, that they may not need them. And I understand that China ports, everything's pretty well plugged up right now. The second choice is to move those sales to next year's crop year. Or number three, to get the North American, South American spread to the point where it would allow U.S. users to import South American soybeans. So one of those three things are going to have to happen, because we have our export sales right at the moment roughly 100 million bushels larger than what USDA has on the balance sheet, and our carryouts at 150. So if you would subtract 100 million off of 150, then our carryout is at 50 million, and we know that that's not going to happen. Something along the line will force upwards of 60 to 70 million bushels of those soybeans to be transferred, or we're going to have 60, 70 million imported or something, because I doubt if we could probably take our ending stocks level down much below 120. So there's 70 million bushels out there somehow is going to have to be realigned somewhere along the line. And nobody, that's going to happen. I can't tell you exactly when that's going to happen. But China is, you know, the thing that we have over South America is that we are a reliable supplier of soybeans. Or let's say we're not only reliable, we're a timely reliable source. If you buy beans from the U.S., we get them to your port. South America has had so many problems over the years with port strikes, congestion, infrastructure problems, that they're not very timely. And I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing China stick with the U.S. Purchases, at least at the moment.
Mike, your view there, are you of the same mind that there's 70 million bushels? And maybe I should ask this question of both of you real quickly. Is that built into the marketplace at this high level, that tight 50 million supply, or do we have to go, or are we going to have to go up and crunch that out? So I what I'm asking is the current price of soybeans a pretty safe and stable level, which I think both of you have already said, and if there's anything that happens, it's got to come because it needs to go up, not down.
Yeah, the 1450 level in the front end March last week on the price model I use would suggest that you're probably running at about a 130 to 135 carryover, and maybe it could be closer to 130, but you know, somewhere between 14 and 1450. I think the trades tried to dial in a 130 to 135 carryover instead of USDA's 150. The trade has essentially said, since the last USDA report when they put the 150 back out there for another month in a row. No, USDA, that can't be right because we keep selling old crop to China. And we even had a period last week where traders in the Pacific Northwest were saying it must be cancellations that the USDA is saying, not new sales, because the Gulf basis, the Pacific Northwest basis, were not moving to suggest that we sold 10 more loads of old crop beans to China. That's how uncertain the market has become on the USDA in terms of their authority and what the old crop carryover is. So that opens the door to the upside substantially with that uncertainty and that volatility. But cutting to the short, I think we're really getting more and more like that 2004 market. It taking away the August rally that we had last year in this current March contract, the trade price action since then has been eerily familiar to how the beans looked back in 2004, and we essentially ran 11% higher from roughly the beef house meeting into the end of March, first of April, and so there's still upside potential if you're running with the 2004 model when it comes to old crop beans especially.
Mike, I want you to look up something for me for just a second while I ask Dan a question. That would be exports as they are running, if you can find them, to Japan at this point. I saw from the U.S. Grains Council on their website in the news section a little chart that showed what had gone through the Panama Canal headed to many nations. Exports of soybeans, corn, bean meal, barley, sorghum, I think, all combined, are running behind 2012. I suspect most of that would be corn headed to Japan, and I kind of confirmed with them that we're behind on our exports to them, behind a drought year, by the way. Can you confirm that for me, and then we can talk a little bit about that. So, Dan, let's talk with you really quickly about the corn market. Can you set the chart table for me for corn at this time?
Posted a monthly reversal to the upside during the month of January, primarily because everybody got real bared up in front of the report, so the market made new lows for the decline off of our last year's high points. And then, of course, the crop report came in much smaller than what the trade was looking at and much smaller ending stocks. So that was able to propel corn futures into a higher monthly finish. Since we took out the December low, during the first part of January, we closed out the month with what I call as a monthly reversal to the upside. That went ahead and showed good follow through, as we went through February, made new, highs for the year. And then that has extended itself, into this week's, kind of blow off here over the Ukraine situation. Now, very similar, technically at the soybeans. Corn was in more of a sideways type price action. The upper end was in this, 440 or 438, 436 area. Lower end was, for the most part, at the 410. So it was kind of like a 26-cent trading range. So you add 26 cents or so onto this 440 area, and that kind of set the stages. There was a little hit. That set the stages to go to 462. If you looked at that chart, you could visualize what I call as a head and shoulders bottom formation in it. It kind of suggested that the lead futures contract could go to 466, and that's exactly what the market did there on Monday before selling off a little bit. So, again, as soybeans kind of met some of their upside targets, new crop months also, I had an objective of something around, I think, 482, and I think today we went to maybe like 485 on East Corn.
Yeah, 484 on the top for a Monday.
Yeah, on Monday. And the next objective would be to go to about 495. So I was, what little bit of advice I do try to point in farmers' direction I was kind of giving farmers those two kind of points to seriously take a good look at moving inventory if they were wanting to put something on the books, was at that 82 level. And then the next point was going to be around 95. And now, for the most part, when I look at the bigger picture of both corn and soybeans, I think soybeans have posted enough of a retracement rally off the 12 highs to kind of say that at least we've met the minimum upside potentials on the soybean market. That doesn't mean that we can't go higher, but at least we met some minimums. Corn, I don't even think Monday's surge to the upside really can be considered a minimum rally, even in a bear market, for those that want to take prices sharply lower next year. I just think that there should be more of a more solid retracement level than what we've done on beans or on corn. I guess we've kind of rallied about 15 cents or so, or I mean 50 cents on corn. But my guess is that it should be a little bit more as we go down the road.
Well, let me get Mike Zuzulo in here. We have about 2.5 minutes, Mike, left. I don't know whether you were able to look that up or you have something in particular you want to talk about with the corn market.
Yeah, your U.S. Grains Council did a chart of the week back on the 6th of February, and it looks like Panama Canal Authority is suggesting that we are at a record year for the marketing year for grain cargoes, the United States grain cargoes passing through the canal. About 20.4 million tons shipped through the marketing year so far. I think the big thing that I'd close on, Todd, and probably one of the biggest things I wanted to talk about at the Beef House, was the idea that with the increased demand and the increased livestock demand, especially that we're seeing and the return of global trade that we're seeing in 2014, that's brought the market back to that inflationary mindset and pulled the funds off the deflation button and selling commodities with deflation in mind. This Ukrainian situation, if it worsens, could push us back into reduced global trade, keeping in mind that a lot of the equity markets values are very important nowadays compared to what they were 20, 50, or 100 years ago. So we could be back into a deflationary mindset if conditions worsen in the Ukraine and we get into a regional conflict with Russia between the European Union and the United States. And so this rally right now, based upon the Ukraine and their shipping availability of corn and wheat especially, may end up being a negative feature in the medium term to the overall health of the commodity trade as we go through 14.
Well, Mike and Dan, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. Sorry that you weren't able to make it to the Beef House with us.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you, Todd.
That is Mike Zuzulo and Dan Zwicker. Mike, of course, with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He is out of Atchison, Kansas, and Dan Zwicker with CGB Enterprises from Mandeville, Louisiana, joining us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. A reminder that we were all on recording on a Monday afternoon because we're all kind of busy for a Tuesday over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, or at least I was. We will be posting some of what happened at the Beef House in video up on our website soon. You can sign up for our newsletter. That'll tell you exactly when. Just hit subscribe over on the right-hand side of the page at willag.org. That's willag.org. Back in just a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Our term for the day is speculate. Speculation is the practice of engaging in risky financial transactions in an attempt to profit from short or medium-term fluctuations in the market value of a tradable good, rather than attempting to profit from the underlying attributes embodied in the instrument. Many speculators pay little attention to the fundamental value of a security or a commodity, and instead focus purely on price movements. Speculation can, in principle, involve any tradable good or financial instrument. Speculators are particularly common in the market for stocks, bonds, commodity futures, currencies, fine art, collectibles, real estate, and derivatives. Speculators play one of four primary roles in financial markets, along with hedgers who engage in transactions to offset some other pre-existing risk. Arbitrageurs who seek to profit from situations where fungible instruments trade at different prices in different market segments, and investors who seek profit through long-term ownership of instruments' underlying attributes. The role of speculators is to absorb excess risk that other participants do not want, and to provide liquidity in the marketplace by buying or selling when no participants from other categories are available. Successful speculation entails collecting an adequate level of monetary compensation in return for providing immediate liquidity and assuming additional risk so that, over time, the inevitable losses are offset by larger profits. And that's the definition of speculation.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
This is the Closing Market Report for Tuesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, out of the office, traveling back probably from the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, or maybe I just went into the Beef House for a little cap after the all-day ag outlook. I suspect it's probably the second one. Nonetheless, Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, agreed to join us early on a Monday afternoon to talk about the weather forecast and look forward just a bit to what we might expect the rest of the week. Don, thank you so much for recording early with us. We do appreciate that. Tell me about the weather forecast as you see it at this time and what kind of conditions we might have for the rest of the week here in the Midwest.
Well, it's still going to stay pretty busy, and we're still expecting our temperatures to remain below normal. Now, those below normal temperatures aren't going to be as severe as they've been, but we are going to trend colder, and there's going to be a small weather system that will produce a little bit of light snowfall over some areas, of especially the western Corn Belt, portions of Nebraska, Minnesota, portions of Iowa. Some of that will get into northern Illinois, northern Indiana, northern Ohio. Not a lot, but it's going to be the first of several systems that are lined up to come through about every 3 or 4 days. So while these systems aren't terribly big, they're going to be frequent, and temperatures are going to remain chilly.
And March came in like with a lion. Will it change to a lamb anytime soon, or are these systems kind of little spitters at us, and then eventually we'll find warmer weather?
Well, we'll eventually find warmer weather, but we're going to have to exercise a lot of patience, and I know everyone's patience has been tested this winter. But as we look ahead into this month of March, the tendencies will still be for below normal temperatures, and with a lot of cold air sitting over south-central areas of Canada and the Great Lakes, and a jet stream that's getting much more active in the Pacific now, the probabilities of frequent precipitation events with below normal temperatures in the month of March look pretty good. So it's going to be a busy month. We will gradually get warmer. But the thing that we at least don't see during the first half of the month is a big warm-up that's going to last more than 2 days. It's going to be a little bit of a roller coaster ride like March usually is.
That's normal for the month of March. Turn your attention to South America. Tell me about prospects for harvest there and producers being able to move through the field to bring soybeans in.
Well, it looks like if there's going to be any delays with any harvest operations where the weather might be a factor, probably be Brazil. It looks a little more wet there as we go through this next weekend. Nothing excessive, but we do see a possibility of above normal precip in some areas of the growing areas of Brazil, while Argentina looks drier.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Don Day with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He, of course, joins us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Thanks for being with us. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.